to navigate life's ups and downs and stressors on our own. It is much, much, much too difficult. And if you're finding that the depression, the anxiety, the substance abuse issues, the panic attacks, the eating disorders are really just becoming too much to bear on your own. Again, I hope that I really have been successful in asking you to give yourself permission to reach out and ask for help. And in fact, every single week on the Ask BD show, you have an opportunity to call me with any questions or issues that you may be wondering about, that you may be struggling about. And for those of you who actually may be tuning in for the very first time and you're wondering, what is this woman talking about? Well, I'm a psychotherapist and a sex therapist, and I'm the author of the groundbreaking book on relationships for better, for worse, forever, discover the path to lasting love. I am the advice columnist for Dan's Papers in the Hamptons in New York and also in Palm Beach. And also, this is a new thing that I'm doing, and I'm very excited about it because I was actually born in Winnipeg, Canada, and I'm now the advice columnist for the Winnipeg Post and news. And I'm sure many of you have seen me on national TV and radio. And I was thinking about when I actually first started to host the Ask BD show here on the Progressive Radio Network. And I think that Gary Null can probably corroborate the date. But if I am correct, this year, and I actually believe it is this month or next month, it is going to be 10 years. And it's like, oh my goodness, where has the time gone? So people who have not heard me and who have not listened to the show over the years may be wondering, well, what is the show really all about? But in one word, because people ask me this all the time, it is about empowerment. The things that we can actually do, not just think about, not just dream about, that will help us improve the quality of our lives and our relationships. So naturally, we talk about mental health issues and sexuality and relationships. And I have one mantra, okay? And I'm hoping that I can convince you to really make this your mantra as well. If we have issues, if we have problems, understanding, of course, that we cannot change our history, I believe that we have a responsibility to ourselves, of course, to do what is in our best interest, to actually be willing to acknowledge, yes, listen, we've messed up a lot in our lives, in our relationships, perhaps at work, at home, with our families, with our children, to be willing to actually acknowledge what's happened and what has not happened in our lives. And again, be willing to address as best as we possibly can things that are not working in our life, with the hope, of course, that we are going to be able to resolve as best as we possibly can the things that are really getting in the way of our being able to have a joyful life. So again, it's about being willing to acknowledge, address, and take whatever steps that are necessary. And again, you don't have to do this on your own. And it's really amazing how much better our lives can become. Because so oftentimes people will say, well, I wish, or I hope, or I would dream. And yet the wishing and the hoping and the dreaming, that may be the first step, but that is not going to translate into any real changes at all unless we are absolutely willing to take some action, whether or not it's about losing weight, whether or not it's about getting fit, whether or not it's about changing careers. We can ruminate and we can complain and we can blame and we can whine and we can moan. But eventually, if we are hoping to have anything change in our lives, we need a strategy. We need a plan, actually an action plan. And I've seen people who've had miserable, miserable lives, and yet they've been able to turn things around. Of course, they haven't been able to change their history because they have been willing to develop a new strategy and take some positive, positive action, which can make all the difference in the world. So I hope this is a motivational intro for all of you who may be listening right now. So here is my weekly how are you doing questions to you. And these are the central issues in our lives that we need to be willing to acknowledge, address, and resolve if things are not going as well as we would like. So again, looking at mental health issues, depression, anxiety, substance abuse of various different kinds, sexual assault, early child sexual abuse. Are you struggling with any or some or all of these problems, which absolutely, absolutely prevent us from being able to live a full, joyful, and happy life? And again, I hope that I can convince you that you don't need to try to figure all of this out on your own. And when Gary Nell and I had originally talked about me hosting the Ask BD show, we'd actually hoped, and I really hoped, that this was going to be a call-in counseling venue where you would have an opportunity to call me live every single Monday with questions and concerns, and we could have conversations and we could debate different issues. But I think because of the fact people are oftentimes at work in the middle of the afternoon, and I think probably the pandemic had something to do with it as well, that it did not turn out to be the show for the most part where people would call me during the show. But today you do have an opportunity, and that number is 888-874-4888, because I actually had hosted many SBD call-in counseling shows on mainstream radio. And I think it's a terrific opportunity for us all to be able to air out our concerns, air out our sorrows, and hopefully come up with a plan of action so that we would then be able to tackle some of the issues and be able to move forward in a positive direction in our lives. So again, if you are struggling with a variety of mental health issues, my question to you is, what is the plan? What are you planning to do about this? And hopefully I have convinced you that today is the day that you actually can reach out and ask for help. And what about your relationships? I mean, really, how are things going in your life with people who you love and who hopefully love you and who really care about you? And remember, of course, there are no relationships that are perfect. In the healthiest of relationships, we are always going to have ups and downs, and yet it is so important. It is so important that we find the time and the words and the ways and the communication and the problem-solving skills to be able to try with people who we really care about, hopefully people who really care about you, to work out the issues in our relationships that are causing us pain and that are causing us disappointments. I think these days it's just so easy to cancel people, to ghost people. And yet, if we do that, I mean, we're probably going to find ourselves alone, because again, in all good relationships, there are going to be problems, big problems and small problems, and waiting for years and sometimes just a lifetime to not tackle the issues and the problems that are getting in the way of our being able to really enjoy our relationships fully. It really does shortchange us and cause us a lot of angst. And a lot of people will say to me, well, I don't know what to say. I don't know how to say it. I don't think he or she is going to be responsive to me. And yet if we don't try to make amends in our relationships, we could possibly be throwing away a lot of important people in our lives. You know, I read the literature on estrangement, and 30% of adult children are estranged from their parents. Now, naturally, none of us want to be in abusive relationships of any kind, but there are going to be problems. There are going to be challenges in our all of our relationships from time to time. And what I do, if you're someone who's in an estranged relationship with your family members or adult children or siblings, to reach out again, assuming, of course, that these are not toxic people, because you don't want to ever entertain the possibility of putting yourself in a situation where you are going to be hurt and where you are going to be in a situation that is destructive and self-destructive. But there are always misunderstandings. There are always going to be issues that are going to surface. So if there's anybody in your life right now who you still care about and who you may not have spoken to for a while, or who you may be estranged from, and you think about them and you still care about them, and there's something that you would actually like to do today to explore the possibility that something could be different, I encourage you. Of course, you can just email, you can text, you can call, although these days it seems that fewer and fewer people actually call people on the telephone. And if you don't try, then you know exactly how things are going to end. And I've seen situations, you know, I've been practicing now for over 35 years as a psychotherapist and sex therapist, and I've seen situations that appeared on the surface to be really hopeless, but there was no, or seemingly no opportunity for anything to change. And again, if there is a will, if there is a way, sometimes if there is a need for professional help, it is amazing what can happen if we are willing to risk, and it is a risk, and to put us out there and to try to see if situations can be mended. So again, you know, I wonder, for those of you who are listening right now and probably thinking about, are there people in my life right now who I have hurt or who I have been involved with, or the relationships have gone so off track, or people who have hurt me? Is there still something? Is it worthwhile? Is it worthwhile to give it another try and see whether or not these one significant relationships that were important to you at one point in your life could be resurrected? Again, there are no guarantees, but if you don't try, if we don't try, we know what the results are going to be. And those results will be that nothing is going to change. What about substance abuse? Are you concerned at all with any alcohol or prescription or over-the-counter medications that you have been using to try to combat your anxiety or your depression. And again, you know, we have to be honest with ourselves. I think that is really, really the first step, that if we're finding that life is out of control in any ways, it always boils down to one question. And that one question is, am I willing, am I prepared to actually do something about it? And it is the action and not just the pondering and thinking and the wishing and the hoping that is ultimately going to determine whether or not we are going to be able to move forward in our life in a really, really positive, positive way. Again, what about physical health? I think it's really easy, especially during the winter, and especially if you're living in a cold climate, that you're inside a lot and sitting around and you're on your various different devices, especially people who are working from home. And yet it's just so important, again, that we are mindful of living our life in ways that are in our best interest. And of course, that includes getting enough exercise and sleep and really taking care of ourselves. So my question to you, my friends, is whether or not you are on board. Are you on board with this strategy? And the strategy is really a strategy that has to do with living your life in ways that are in your best interest, being good to yourself. And you might ask yourself that question right now on a day-to-day basis, beginning today, have I been good to myself? Have I eaten well? Have I moved around? Have I communicated with people in a loving and caring and compassionate way, whether we're not talking about personal relationships or business relationships? So we have to in a way micromanage ourselves and making sure that we are on a constructive path. And if we fall off, if we happen to fall off, and we all do from time to time, the constructive path, we have to figure out what to do, figure out a strategy to get us back into a place that is good for us. Okay, so hopefully I have been able to convince you to take an honest look, you know, where you are in your life. And if you're not in a place where you'd like to be, I also hope that I have convinced you and motivated you to actually do something about it. Now, I want to talk about relationships and what people oftentimes don't tend to do once they are in a relationship, especially once that they are in a relationship that has lasted for many, many years. Do you remember when you were first dating, you fixed yourself up and you looked well and you spoke thoughtfully and you were doing, and most of us were doing, everything that we could possibly do to attract somebody and find a relationship and find love. And what I've seen over the years, because I've treated hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of couples, is that what we initially did in the beginning, we oftentimes tend to put aside. And it is always a mistake. You know, I was reading something that I'd written many, many years ago. The headline was Tips for Valentine's Day. And we think about Valentine's Day, or we think about anniversaries and birthdays, and those are just a few special days during the course of a year. And those days, they are important, and they are important to celebrate. However, it is what we do every single day when it is not a holiday, when it is not Valentine's Day, that is going to determine how well or how badly we do in our personal and intimate relationships. So these are a few reminders that I would like to remind you about. You know, number one, it is so important to keep the couple at the top of the list of priorities and not just on Valentine's Day or on special occasions. So again, in looking at your own relationships, if you are fortunate enough to have a partner, a healthy, loving partner, ask yourself the question, you know, do you prioritize your relationship? It doesn't mean you don't have friends. It doesn't mean you don't have a life. It doesn't mean you don't have children, perhaps, and a job. But do you really take those extra little steps every single day to let your partner know how important he or she is? And if you haven't, this is a reminder for you to do so beginning today. It's important that we treasure our relationships, and relationships require a lot of attention. You know, these little things that, you know, again, I think we would think about so much at the beginning of a relationship, and people get lazy and they get bored and they get boring. And then we just kind of wonder why our relationship is just not working or is really off track. So don't take each other's for granted, because it is the little things that make all the difference in the world. And these little things do not have to be expensive. A surprise card or a flower, just because I love you, really does wonders. And try to remember to keep the romance and sex alive. It is important. And you want to make dates and remember to keep the dates. You know, I had a couple who they talked about, I think it was on a Wednesday night, that they were going to get a babysitter, that they were going to go out for dinner, that they were really going to focus on their marriage. And yet, I think it was months and months before they started couple therapy with me. There was always something else that came up. And clearly, their relationship was not a priority. And as a result, these people were having a lot of difficulties. Also, when issues arise, we would like to pretend that they're not arising. We would like to maybe bury them. But my advice to you is to deal with them as soon as possible. And what that means is don't let your laundry list of complaints get out of hand. And when there are issues, think about dealing with the problems respectfully and with love. Set a time, okay? And not when you're going to go to sleep or you're running out of the door, to address whatever it is that's going on or not going on that is causing you angst, that is causing you upset. And remember, again, it's how you say it, where you say it, when you say it. And the goal, of course, is to say it well so that you are hopefully going to end up with a win-win resolution. It is not about being right. It is about being able to make compromises and trade-offs, because rarely are we ever going to get every single thing that we want. And that is what happy and healthy couples do. So again, give your relationship, if you are lucky enough to have a relationship, and hopefully it is a good relationship, give your relationship the attention that it absolutely deserves. There was a very, very interesting article. I'm always looking for interesting articles to share with you. And this is an article about the number one thing that destroys the relationship, says researchers who happen to have studied couples for 50 years, and I want to share with you some of their findings. This is what they say as a psychologist and sexologist, and I have to give credit to the researchers, a Dr. Jessica Griffin and Dr. Pepper Schwartz, very, very well-known psychologist and TV personality. And this is what they say. As a psychologist and sex therapist, we've been studying relationships for more than 50 years combined, and we found that no matter how you slice it, most of them fail because of poor communication, and I would add also poor problem-solving skills. So in his book, What Predicts Divorce?, psychologist Dr. John Gottman, very, very well known with his wife Julie, identifies the four most problematic types of communication in relationships based on his studies of 40,000 couples. So this was not just some small little study. Okay, number one. So we need to remember to not do these things in our relationships. Number one, contempt. Expressing a lack of respect for our partners. Example, name calling, eye rolling, ridiculing. You know, do you ever do what I think that all of us have been guilty at some point in time in doing something like this that is very, very destructive to our relationships. Number two, criticism. Attacking a partner's character. It's one thing to say, you know, I don't like it when you don't clean the sink, darling, but it's another thing to call somebody, for example, just a name that's hurtful. Number three, defensiveness. Protecting from criticism by using excuses or shifting blame. You know what somebody will do? Where somebody is just defensive and they're not willing to own what they did or what they didn't do that happened to hurt their partner. Number four, stonewalling. You know what that is. I don't want to talk about it, okay? Now, somebody may not want to talk about it right this moment, but hopefully this person, your partner, will say, look, I don't feel like talking about it right now, but why don't we plan on getting together in an hour or in 2 hours when I have calmed down, and I will gladly sit down with you and talk about the issues and talk about what's bothering me and talk about what's bothering you. That's very, very different than just saying, I'm not going to talk about it. And of these four, Dr. Gottman says the biggest predictor of a failed relationship is contempt. And again, expressing a lack of respect for our partners. And he goes on, and I think it's important that we are clear about what these different things are. So what does contempt look like? Contempt is more than criticism or saying something negative. It's when one partner asserts that they are smarter, have better morals, or are simply a better human being than the other. The partner on the receiving end feels unworthy and unloved. For example, continually interrupting the other person is disrespectful, but it turns into contempt when the interruption is not an overeager desire to talk, but rather a statement that the partner has nothing interesting or important to say. It could be as obvious as a spouse saying, oh, he's not worth listening to. He couldn't tell a story to save his life. And when this type of behavior becomes more than rare, and when it is either unrecognized or delivered with intent, any relationship, much less a marriage, is in trouble. So we have to really be honest with ourselves about how we communicate to our partners, really to everybody in our life. Contempt makes it impossible for partners to feel like they have each other's back. And that's something that we want if we decide to become a partner, right? We want to feel that that person has our back. The other person wants to feel that they have our back as well. Instead of it's you and me against the problem, partners are now the opponents. And that's something that is so important, because when there is a couple's problem, it is a me problem. There may be me problems as well, such as your own depression or substance abuse or other individual issues. But when couples have problems, it is a me issue that needs to be acknowledged and addressed and resolved. And this often stems from individuals feeling that they are standing up for themselves, which is usually a healthy thing to do. But the problem is that they are standing up for themselves against their partner, trying to raise themselves up while tearing their partner down. Contempt isn't just bad for relationships, it's also bad for our health. We need one another to survive. Contempt cuts off or threatens those ties to other people, particularly other people who we are supposed to love. And the research is showing that individuals who use contempt in their communication have higher rates of disease, including cancer, heart disease, and other illnesses such as colds or flu. So what do we do? How to eliminate contempt in your relationship? And I love these suggestions. Number one, identify and share negative feelings. You want to be able to say, look, I'm really upset about what you did or didn't do, and I would like to speak with you about it. Because when we don't know how to name or talk about negative feelings, it's tempting to take them out on others. And this is where the how to say it, where to say it, when to say it, how to do all of this well, where you are looking with your partner, hopefully, to come up with a win-win resolution. This is an example that Dr. Gottman gives. He says, I can't believe you are canceling our date night to meet with your friends. And this is a bad way of doing this. You're a selfish jerk. You never think about my feelings. Now, what would be a better way to say this to avoid contemptuous communication? Use this formula instead. State what you're feeling. For example, I feel annoyed. I feel sad. I feel disappointed. I feel neglected, because I was looking forward to spending time together. It's honest, it's positive, there is no contempt, and it's true. Number two, add a request. I'd like to avoid this happening in the future by talking about it first before changing plans. Number three, invite your partner to the conversation. Do you think that we can do that? Do you think that that is something that you would like to do, or if there's going to be a change in plans, that we are going to talk about it? And number two, create a culture of appreciation. Expressing appreciation. And how often do we do this in our intimate relationships? I appreciate the fact that you made me coffee. I appreciate the fact that you let me sleep. I appreciate the fact that you took out the dog. Expressing appreciation helps us notice more of our partner's positive qualities rather than the negatives. I mean, ideally, we want our positive statements and gestures to outweigh the negative ones. The magic ratio, this is interesting, is at least 5 positive statements or feelings to 1 negative one. Do you do that in your day-to-day communication and relationships? But I think it's interesting to think about tracking your communication patterns over a period of a week. How often You got to be honest with yourself. How often are you engaging in negative interactions, nagging, criticizing, ignoring, eye rolling versus positive ones, praising, complimenting, doing something nice with the other partner, and expressing appreciation? The following week, interact with your partner using the magic ratio. Okay, that is 5 positive statements to 1 negative one. And we need to be conscious about all of this. And you can also try to make a list of 20 things that you love about each other. And I know that this probably sounds very, very corny, but it's important to do. It's really important to do. Otherwise, it is so easy to get on a very, very, very negative track. And what I do with couples who I see in my private practice here in New York City and also in East Hampton, after I do the initial couples evaluation, and then I meet with the people individually to make sure that one or both people do not have their own significant individual issues, which will always get in the way of the couples. And these also need to be dealt with. And I frequently will see people individually as well as a couple, if there is a need for both individual psychotherapy and couples therapy as well. You know, it's interesting. People years and years ago, you know, they asked me whether or not I would be willing to do both. You know, when couples initially came in for couples therapy, and if I discovered that, yes, one or both did have individual issues that were definitely interfering not only with their own lives, but with their relationships as well. And I found a way to juggle all of this pretty well. And once we get to a point where we're able to really focus on the couple's issues, I have each person write down all of the different complaints, all of the different upsets on a piece of paper. And we start to tackle each one of these issues one by one. And of course, the resolution has to do so often, in fact, almost completely, with how well the couple are able to communicate and problem solve. And of course, these are skills. And I really wish that the schools, and of course, some of the schools are doing a pretty good job with this. I think I mentioned to you that I am a consultant at East Hampton High School in East Hampton, New York, where there is an amazing health teacher, Jim Stewart, who I partner with, and we are teaching, and he's been teaching at the school for over 45 years, helping the children to identify whatever they're feeling, the good, the bad, the ugly, the upset, the happy, and then even more importantly, helping them to communicate their feelings in a really healthy and positive way. So, you know, so oftentimes I think that I've found that people simply don't have the communication and problem solving skills. And trust me, these are skills. These are not things that any of us were born knowing. And it is how well or how badly we communicate our ups and downs that will ultimately determine how well or how badly our relationships are ultimately going to be. So that if you're finding in your own relationship, whether it's your own partnership, your own intimate relationship, or your family relationship, or relationships that you have with colleagues, if you're finding that you're really going around in circles and that you've been able to honestly diagnose for yourself that the problem is communication and problem solving, there are all kinds of ways to improve these skills. Of course, there's programs online and there's books. And of course, there is therapy, because, I mean, all the researchers and all of us in the mental health field, this is one thing that we will agree on, is that It is a fact that emotional communication and problem solving are the two most important skills that actually make or break. So if you need a little bit of practice, if you need a little or a lot of coaching, again, give yourself permission and reach out for help. Another article that I found this past week that I really wanted to share with you. And this is a review. This is an article where there is a review of 1,039 studies that indicate that exercise can be more effective than counseling or medication for depression. Of course, I was very interested to read this. And this is what was found by the authors. They say that we reviewed 97 papers, 97 different papers, which involved 1,039 trial studies, and 128,119 participants. Okay. And we found doing 150 minutes each week of various types of physical activities, such as brisk walking, or lifting weights and yoga, significantly reduces depression, anxiety, and psychological distress compared to usual care, such as medication. And the study, by the way, published in the British Journal of Sports Medicine, reviewed more than 1,000 of these research trials examining the effects of physical activity on depression, anxiety, and psychological distress. So the article goes on and asks the question, how much more effective? Okay. And the largest improvement, as self-reported by the participants, were seen in people with depression, HIV, kidney disease, in pregnant and postpartum women, and in healthy individuals, though clear benefits were seen for all populations. The researchers found the higher the intensity of exercise, the more beneficial it is. For example, walking at a brisk pace instead of walking at a usual pace. And exercising for 6 to 12 weeks, apparently, they found, has the greatest benefits rather than for short periods of time. And that long-term exercise is important for maintaining mental health improvements. So then, of course, they asked the question, how much more effective is exercise? So when comparing the size of the benefits of exercise to other common treatments for mental health conditions from previous systematic reviews, our findings suggest, now listen to this, that exercise is around 1.5 times more effective than either medication or cognitive behavioral therapy. Now, how many of you tend to exercise on a regular basis? In the short term, what does exercise do? It helps boost our mood and buffer stress. Long term, the release of neurotransmitters in response to exercise promotes changes in the brain that help with mood and cognition, decreases inflammation, and boosts immune function, which all influence our brain function and mental health. Regular exercise can lead to improved sleep, which plays a critical role in depression and anxiety. It also has psychological benefits, such as increased self-esteem and sense of accomplishment, all of which are beneficial for people struggling with depression. The findings underscore the crucial role of exercise for managing depression, anxiety, and psychological distress. And some clinical guidelines already acknowledge the role of exercise. For example, the Australian and New Zealand clinical guidelines suggest that medication, psychotherapy, and lifestyle changes such as exercise. However, other leading bodies, such as the American Psychological Association clinical practice guidelines, emphasize medication and psychotherapy alone and list exercise as an alternative treatment in the same category as acupuncture. And while the label alternative can mean many things when it comes to treatment, it tends to suggest that it sits outside conventional medicine or does not have a clear evidence base. And neither of these things are true in the case of exercise for mental health. And it's important to note that while exercise can be an effective tool for managing mental health conditions, people with mental health conditions should work with a health professional to develop a comprehensive treatment plan rather than just going it alone. And a treatment plan is what it could look like. It's a combination of lifestyle approaches such as exercising regularly, eating a balanced diet, and socializing alongside treatments such as psychotherapy and medication. But exercise, certainly in my view, shouldn't be viewed as a nice-to-have option. In fact, what research is very, very clear about is that it is a powerful and accessible tool for managing mental health conditions. And the best part is that it's free with plenty of additional health benefits. So, again, you know, I wish we were all in a room together, and I wanted to ask you, you know, how many of you exercise on a regular basis? I mean, I have, for my entire life, I really have to thank my late father for this. I mean, I have been an athlete probably since the time I was two or three, when my parents in Winnipeg, Canada, enrolled me in figure skating. And all I can tell you is during some of the most stressful times of my life, and I have told many of you for years, I'm a competitive tennis player. I was number 10 in Canada as a junior, and I think it's probably honest to say that I am playing the best singles tennis of my life. But what I have found is that during the most stressful and difficult periods of my life, exercise has really made all the difference in the world. And I'll share with you my own routine. In fact, yesterday, Jim and I, we were lucky enough to have a friend of ours give us their treadmill. And one of my big concerns was, how is this treadmill going to look in our apartment? But the treadmill arrived because I haven't been playing tennis in the last couple of months, and I'm looking forward to getting outdoors, starting to, you know, hit the ball on a regular basis. And I got on the treadmill yesterday after it was delivered, and it was just this sense of freedom, this sense of exhilaration. Yes, I felt a little bit out of shape. And it immediately, and I've known this about myself, it immediately changed my mood, which was okay. I wasn't feeling depressed. And I just had this sense of freedom and this sense of exhilaration. And every single day, even prior to our getting this treadmill, I have an exercise protocol that I have had for many, many, many years. And it includes lifting weights and moving. And this is the way I typically start my day. And if I wake up and on occasion I'm going to make excuses why I can't exercise, or I'm too tired, or I have too much to do, all I can tell you is that it has made a really, really profound, profound difference in my life. So today is the day, even though you may not have exercised in days or weeks or months or even years, you can start really, really slowly. And it's amazing. It's really amazing how quickly you can experience a shift in mood with those neurotransmitters, you know, really lighting up in our brains. And not only are you going to feel better, of course, you are going to look better and you are going to feel fit. And I'm hoping that you will really take this suggestion and you can start slowly. And spring is almost here, so we're going to be able to be spending a lot of time outdoors. And, you know, I'm trying to really provide you with evidence-based research and information that works. This is not going to be a psychobabble show. It never was. It never will be. It is not who I am. So all of the recommendations that I talk about, healthy relationships and the importance of emotional communication and problem solving and eating well and getting enough sleep and making sure that we have zero toxicity in our lives, and that includes chemicals as well as people. I mean, these are evidence-based findings that can really make a tremendous, tremendous positive difference in our lives. And what I found too, you know, it takes a lot of self-discipline for us to be able to get out of our, in quotes, comfort zones. And very, very often our comfort zones are zones that are not zones that are in our best interest. And this is why that I do hope that every single week that I'm able to, you know, provide you with some little bit of motivation and motivational information that can actually make a positive difference in your life. You know, I'm looking at something that I had read years ago about people in Sardinia. They happen to actually live the longest. So, of course, I was very curious to find out what do they do. So what they do is they eat healthily. They interact and socialize, which, of course, is so important. They sleep 8 hours a night. And they take naps, they exercise, and of course they have supportive people in their lives. You know, another finding that I think is so important, and of course this is how I have lived my life, which is really basically helping people. I mean, I've been practicing now as a psychotherapist and sex therapist for over 35 years. And I was saying to somebody this morning, she asked me, she said, isn't it hard? Isn't it tough? And sometimes the patients that I'm treating, they have significant emotional, psychological, and psychiatric issues. But I've never looked at what I do as a job. And I think that in helping others, I mean, I've treated thousands and thousands of people over the years, I feel that I have gotten back so much in being able to open myself up to meeting people who I probably would have never, ever, ever met just in my own personal space. So helping others, whether or not it's just giving somebody a dollar on the street, somebody who is homeless, opening a door for somebody who's having difficulty entering a store or a building. I don't know about you, but that really, really helps me to feel good. I think probably I feel better than the person that that is needing the help in the act of actually doing and helping others. And if you're finding that you're alone and that you don't have family and you don't have support and you don't have friends, you know, one of the things that I suggested to a patient of mine is that she actually definitely consider beginning to go to support groups. It doesn't matter if you don't have the exact presenting problem that the support groups are supposedly dealing with. It's the connection. It's the socialization. It is the feeling of being a part of something that can really take us into a much, much, much better place. So I don't know whether you've ever actually thought about that. If you're feeling lonely and depressed and disconnected, I mean, there are support groups for all kinds of issues that are running 365 days of the year. So even though it may sound silly, at least it would give you an opportunity to meet people, to hear what other people are doing, for you to be able to express what's going on or not going on in your life. And at least even for a short period of time, that you will be able to experience some connection, because it is the connection that really does sustain us in our lives. So I'm sitting at my computer here on the Upper West Side in New York City. I haven't been to the studio in, actually, it was a few months when I had Andrew's Solomon, Dr. Andrew Solomon. I really wanted to meet him. He'd done a lot of reading and writing about depression and suicide in teens. And I remember I said to my husband, Jim, I said, I really, regardless of what the temperature was in New York City, I really wanted to go to the studio and meet Dr. Solomon. But it's amazing to me. It's 3:57. I don't know where the time goes, especially when you're having a good time. And again, I want to thank you all so much for listening every week. People send me texts, they send me emails, and I always love to hear from you. And I do, I hope that there is some little thing that I do say every week that can be a bit of an aha moment for you, and then can put you in into a better space and on a better path. So I want to leave you with my two weekly messages. And the first, of course, is to do everything that you can possibly do to be mindful of living your life in ways that are truly in your best interest. So that means micromanaging yourself and asking yourself as you go through your day, is this, whatever this is this good for me? And secondly, of course, we need to do a much, 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 much better job in learning to love each other. So again, I hope you're going to have a good rest of the day. And I want to thank you again for tuning in to the Ask Beauty Show every single week. And if you haven't been lucky enough to hear the show live, the Progressive Radio Network has an archives, and you can listen to hundreds of Ask Beauty shows in the Progressive Radio Network archives. So again, have a good rest of the day, and I will talk with you next Monday and every Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So goodbye, everybody. Love yourself, and let's do a better job in loving each other. Bye-bye.